This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 355, brought to you by the Seagate GoFlex Satellite, New York Comic Con, and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 355. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi, Josh.
Ron Richards.
Only you, Josh. I've had enough of Ron.
Listen, it was a rough weekend in Vegas.
everyone understands. It's fair. iFanboy.com is our website that we made because we like comics. So that's actually what the website's mostly about, because we read them, and then every week we read a bunch of them, the ones that we want to read. And we have the job of picking the one that we think is the best comic that we can call that, the pick of the week. A review goes up on the website on Wednesdays. Then we write about it there, and then we come here, we talk about that pick and the other books from the week and some other stuff that we feel like talking about. But before we get to the show, we are going to be talking about what happened in the paltry few books we read this week. So there will be spoilers for all three or four of them. This is a review show, as you know. So you're warned. If you don't want your books to be spoiled, come back later or read your books and do all that. Connor, I do not begrudge your position this week.
I'm not even reading the script, and Connor, you got me with the script bomb.
that's an old one. I just left it because it's a good one. This week was weird. As Josh said, it was a kind of a light week. There wasn't a lot out. Oh, there were some high-profile releases out. It wasn't like a lot of books. Everything's coming out next week. Next week's going to suck for Ron.
Yeah, that's for sure, especially New York Comic Con week. Yay.
So it didn't take me long to read my books. I only had about 12. But unlike normal, I didn't have a clear pick of the week when I finished. Not that there wasn't a choice. I actually had three choices, and it was a matter of picking between the three. So I actually, instead of my normal routine is to finish the books, and I have a clear pick, and I just jump right in while it's fresh in my mind to write the review. But I actually went off. I went to the gym. I let it ruminate for a while.
Had a soak.
You had to really think about it.
There was a sauna. I did a little sauning.
Had a schwitz.
Had a schwitz in the sauna. Talked about it with the old retired Hollywood man in the sauna.
Well, you do two to four hours at the barber shop every down in Fairfax every day, right?
I can't be shaving this head myself.
Well, right.
I need a professional.
Talking to Morty Zuckerman. Exactly. He's down there. Morty.
That's where Larry King hangs out now because he's got nowhere else
to go. His crew.
Mm-hmm. So I ended up with Legends of the Dark Knight number one as the pick of the week, and this is the paper version of the digital book that comes out weekly in small chapter form. And this is the one I've been looking forward to the most. The other are the Smallville book, which I've been enjoying, and we're going to talk about the new one later on. And there's the Amikami one. Is that pronounced correctly? Probably not.
Ami Comics or whatever it is.
That's the sort of based on the toy line. It's all those female superheroes, which actually has like Amanda Conner drew one of them, which is interesting. But
yeah,
this is the one I'm looking forward to the most. It's the Batman anthology with some high profile creators. And I wrote in my review that it's sort of a mashup of the Batman Legends of the Dark Knight series that ran for like 20 years and the Batman Black and White miniseries, in which you basically have out of continuity stories about Batman with high-profile creators on them. And in this case, we have a Damon Lindelof-written, Jeff Lemire-drawn Batman story. We have a J.G. Jones-drawn Batman story. And we have a Nicola Scott-drawn Batman story. So you've got, on the art side, at least three really high-profile art teams. And then you've got, you know, famous Hollywood guy doing one story. And then you've got two basic newcomers on these other stories. And those were actually really fun. But you know, for me, the big excitement was seeing Jeff Lemire do Batman.
So now, did you not read them on the digital releases?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you been?
Not this one. You know, I've been reading Smallville that way and that sort of thing, but I haven't read this one.
This is great because you know everyone knows Jeff Lemire now. For the most part, he probably has his most fans from doing writing work for DC, for writing Animal Man, writing Justice League Dark and Frankenstein previously. So, you know, if you don't know, he's also a celebrated independent creator. He does his own drawing for his books and. His is a style that's very independent, very offbeat, very not the normal DC superhero style. And I've always wanted to see him draw some DC superheroes because his style is so interesting. And I remember a couple years ago someone at DC telling us that was never going to happen because style was so weird. But here it is. And, you know, you couldn't pick a more perfect character for him to draw than Batman. His sort of angular, rough, dark, you know, everyone is kind of ugly style really works. There's a one shot where he draws the Rogues Gallery, you know, the Joker and Two-Face, Catwoman, Mr. Freeze, Poison Ivy, and Killer Croc, and they just look so monstrous, and it's perfect. You know, he's great, and it's a nice little 10-page story. It's from early on in Batman's career where he claims to have no vulnerabilities, which is why he's the superior superhero, because nothing can hurt him. He doesn't have kryptonite problems. He doesn't have fire problems. He doesn't have a yellow weakness. He's just a man with no weaknesses. Told in a very funny sequence where he's either drunk or pretending to be drunk, and either way, it's very funny because he's sort of railing at Alfred about how he's the best superhero. Alfred's like, "We've had a lot to drink," and he just—it's very good 2-page sequence. It told in a 12-panel grid on each page, very funny. And then at the end, Batman finds that his weakness is a baseball bat, and a crowbar and a bunch of fists.
I thought it was ladies.
Well, he gets beaten down, and spoiler alert: you find out that Alfred hired these thugs to beat him up.
That's awesome.
Because he wanted to show him that he is in fact vulnerable to, you know, to something.
Pain.
So it's actually a really nice little sweet story. And then the middle story, Batman's on this JLA satellite and Amazo attacks. Instead of calling for help, he just decides to beat him on his own and uses his wits to outwit him. And it's a nice little J.G. Jones classic Justice League, Batman and Justice League satellite story. And then the final story features art by Nicola Scott, and it's Batman and Robin convincing a newly laid off worker that he shouldn't rob his old job and it's better to not turn to a life of crime. So they kind of do preventative care there. But the interesting thing about all three stories is they take place in the old DCU, which...
Interesting, really?
Yeah, Batman's got his trunks on over his suit and all of them. This is the old Tim Drake is Robin in the story wearing his original Robin costume. Not the original Dick Grayson one, the first one that Tim Drake wore. Technically the second one. The first one he wore was in A Lonely Place of Dying, the original suit. And then in the satellite, he goes into the trophy room and you see pictures of the Justice League all in their old, you know, costumes and their old guises in the original Martian Manhunter. So it's funny how they've made such great pains to separate themselves from the old universe, yet here we have this digital book, which supposedly is probably pushed on more of a general audience because that's what they're aiming for with the digital books, taking place in the old universe.
They're legends, mm-hmm. though.
Which I find fascinating. Yeah, no, it's not inappropriate. It's just funny. It took me about two stories to realize what I was seeing.
Yeah.
Just interesting is all. It's just interesting.
I think you'll slowly see them start to bleed the old stuff back in, and then eventually it will just be unrecognizable difference.
Yeah, possibly.
It'll just become the whole thing's part of it.
But this is a great...
Somebody will want to use something from the past, you know, in a number of years.
I think right now you've. I mean, I don't think there's been a problem using stuff in the past. I think that's been that has been the problem. Has been using stuff in the past.
Yes, so it's far. Just the stupid uniforms.
Yeah. So if you're like if you want to read non-continuity short stories done by top-notch artists and also you know really solid writing teams, then that Legend of the Dark Knight is something you can check out. You can check it out now. Online, I think they're up to chapter 9. The first two chapters are in this book, and
this is the title that the Gabe Hardman and Jeff Parker story is appearing in, right?
The next issue features a Ben Templesmith drawn story, which is his first DC or Marvel work. And then later on, you've got a Jeff Parker written, Gabe Bill Hardman drawn Batman story. So I think if you want that kind of short story, fun 10-page, non-continuity, you know, top creative team book, this is the one to check out.
You know, it's funny because like a part of me wants to read it digitally. You know, like I want to go and read the short kind of burst and read the Gabe Hardman Jeff Parker. But I just don't remember. You know what I mean? Like that's the one thing about the Wednesday releases in the comic book stores that I know I've got to go to the comic store on Wednesday to get my comics. Right.
That's a really good point, and I absolutely agree with that. I'm like, oh, those went up. Like I don't know that they're gonna go up. How do I know? Yeah. Yeah. I get a lot of press releases in my email.
There needs to be an alert. I think, but for me, I want to just read the whole story because I think the digital releases are you know chapters. So I don't know if it's the whole tale.
Oh yeah, no, they're chapters. Yeah. So I mean, what they do is they release you know eight pages or so weekly, and then they collect them all into that issue at the end of the month. So
yeah.
But is each chapter 99 cents?
Yeah. I believe so. Yeah.
So it seems like a much better deal to it's wait cheap. For the.
No, I think it's cheaper to go online.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think so.
How much was this issue?
$3.99.
Because if each chapter is 99 cents and you got three of the stories, or no, you just got one of the chapters of each.
I don't know. I don't know, John.
This is very confusing.
I can't do the math. I don't know.
That was totally like post Las Vegas, like stop talking now because I am not following you and I don't care to.
Now, the other book that was almost pick of the week was Detective Comics 13, which was the first issue with the new creative team written by John Layman of Chew. And drawn by Jason Fabuk. And did anybody else read this?
I did. I actually forgot about it, and then I noticed it last, so I made sure to get it in before we did the show.
And also the backup story drawn by Andy Clark. Josh, what did you think of it?
It was okay. I thought it was all right. It obviously better than the Tony Daniel written one. I don't think the art was particularly great. There was a couple of pages were just a lot of shots of Penguin's face from exactly the same angle a bunch of times in a row, and I just thought that's weird. But I don't know, it didn't really excite me one way or the other.
I think the only downside to it is that Fabuk is serviceable.
Yeah,
though I think he's getting better from the last time I saw him. I think that Layman has a great handle on these characters in this world. I thought there was a lot of interesting little touches, that, like the fact that apparently Bruce Wayne donates a lot of money to hospitals because he's constantly beating people up and sending them to the hospital. And I liked the backup story was great, told from the point of view of the criminal. And I was always waiting for a swerve for Batman to show up or something like that, and then it just never happened. And it was fun. I really liked this as a huge leap of quality over the what it's been. It's been a while since both Batman and Detective were good books.
I liked it. I think it was a little bit of a change from I guess what I'm used to in the Batman books, which isn't really a bad thing. I think the thing was that I really enjoyed, obviously, I really like Chew a lot, and I've actually really been enjoying Mars Attacks also. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like wanted to like this more than I did. It was okay. It was fine. It was, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but I wasn't like, wow, that was totally fun. If that makes sense.
No, that makes sense.
I don't think I like the Penguin all that much. I like it for a while. They used the Penguin as sort of an element, and he was never sort of the main bad guy. He was just a part that was there, and I actually like him as that more. Okay, because Like for a little while, he was a bad guy, but he wasn't really like the big threat, so they didn't really worry about him. He was doing his thing, and here he is, the super bad guy again.
Well, kind of. I mean, he's still a crime boss. He's not a super villain. The only difference is they've added him in the last couple of years to be a original family member, like a Mayflower family of Gotham. So the only difference really is that he's now more of a connection to the Waynes, the Cobblepots, the Canes, and whoever else was in that group with the original founding families of Gotham. So that's really the only difference. He's still basically a crime boss.
I thought plotting wise it was actually really nice. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of an interesting thing to do. And then at the end, there was a good sort of extension. I wouldn't really call it a twist, but it was like, oh, these guys are gonna be ninjas. But it just felt a little standard, I guess, and the art didn't really help.
It does show that Layman has a lot of range.
Absolutely. And I mean when I've talked to him, like he Chew wasn't supposed to be a comedy.
Right.
it wasn't supposed to be a funny book. It was supposed to be like a dark, you know, morbid book. And like that's the kind of stuff that he actually gravitates to, apparently. So this is actually seems like it should be right where he fits.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think he's a good choice, a good, interesting choice to write this book.
I think he'll definitely grow into it more.
Ron?
Yes.
Avengers X-Men number 12. And yeah. It wrapped everything up.
So Avengers X-Men number 12 came to an end. This past week, I was on the show last week, and this past weekend, Connor and I were in Vegas for Morrison Con, which was a blast and went really well. But I was actually there. Two of the guests were Jonathan Hickman and Jason Aaron. And Sunday night at the con, we were having dinner, and I kind of vented a little on them.
I dumped a plate of food on Jonathan Hickman.
And I ranted about the stuff that we talked about with the last issue, which is basically where I said that Cyclops was getting the screw job and that they didn't really sell him as the villain. And it got pretty heated. I'll be honest with you.
Just on your side, or do they counter your argument?
No, on their side. Well, Jason Aaron's point was that you haven't read the last issue, so you don't know how it ends. Right. And so he was very curious to hear what I would think of it. And then Jonathan Hickman's point was that he agreed with me in that what I was saying is that what Cyclops was doing, you know, like he hadn't, you know, he didn't really do anything wrong and was kind of helping the world. And Jonathan's like, right, that's the angle. That's the challenge, is that Cyclops doesn't think that he was in the wrong. You know, that Cyclops is doing these things to help humanity and all that sort of thing. And that's what makes it an interesting story. So it was an interesting conversation. But I said, all right, well, I'll reserve judgment until I read issue number 12. I can't say I love it. It wasn't bad. It was a good issue. It was a good.
I want to see that on a cover. Ron Richards, I can't boy.
With the ellipses and the dashes.
No, but the thing is,
a question mark.
And the thing is, this is how I prefaced it to Aaron and to Hickman. I was like, listen, you understand, this is not me as a media professional critic review. This is me as a unabashed, total X-Men Cyclops fanboy. Like that's totally where this reaction comes from.
This is not a rational reaction you're having. This is you as a Cyclops fan.
Yeah. This is an emotional kind of like I'm watching my hero get the guy who I associate with, who I enjoy the most, get basically teared down. That said, I thought that they did wrap up the Scarlet Witch's role, Hope's role, all the Kun Lun crap.
What was in the closet?
Nothing. They still haven't found out what's in the closet.
They didn't wrap up her anything.
Well, that's going to be on. Bendis' shoulders in his Avengers wrap up. I didn't expect to see the closet here in this issue. That's going to happen in the Avengers. But you know, they kind of tied in, showed us, you know, how those three kind of factors all play together, and then in the kind of final battle between Scott as Dark Phoenix. You know, I thought there was the right amount of history. There was the right amount of, you know, like Cyclops, you know, when it switches over to Cyclops' narration, like kind of internal monologue, and it's like relating to the conflict with him and Wolverine, relating to his relationship with Xavier, relating to Jean. And then when Jean shows up and tells him to let it go, like I thought it hit all those notes that I would want it to hit. You know, and for those not reading, basically they, you know, the Scarlet Witch and Hope. Hope is able to use her power, mimicking powers, to mimic Scarlet Witch's hex powers to overwhelm the Phoenix and knock the Phoenix out of Scott. But then Hope receives the Phoenix Force and becomes the white version, the white costume version of the Phoenix that we saw Jean and Grant Morrison's run wear.
The white
and
then, power Phoenix. Oh,
and wait. she goes and basically fixes everything. You know, she kind of repairs all the destruction that Scott and the other Phoenix forces did around the world, and kind of fixes everything. And then, in one last moment, she and Scarlet Witch release the Phoenix and say no more Phoenix, and the Phoenix just flies away. And then the long term ramification is that the Phoenix basically restarted the mutants on Earth, and so all of a sudden they start seeing Cerebro starts seeing all pings of new mutants.
Well, it didn't so much fly away as it just sort of broke up into little pieces, which then populated the
yeah,
right?
I mean,
that's what it looked to me.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it defeated the Phoenix Force. Well, I mean,
that panel with the Earth, it shows it like all over the world.
Yeah,
I thought those pieces of the Phoenix then went around populating the
mutants. Oh, could be. Yeah. It could be. You know, and then of course we get the epilogue, which is what I was afraid of, which is Cyclops in a ruby quartz cell with a big headpiece over his eyes and in shackles and in prison garb, and he's chatting with Captain America, and they're talking about what happened, and Cyclops is saying how he takes full responsibility. We get a sense that Magneto and Emma and all the other ones are kind of on the run now. You know, there's your new Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and you get a hint of, you know, Cap does take responsibility for what I complained about, which is that he says, I take responsibility for not supporting mutants as much as I should have, and I'm going to do something about that. So everyone kind of learns and moves on. But now Cyclops is in prison, and that kind of sucks. But he feels justified in that all this led to there being more mutants, and so he wouldn't, he doesn't regret anything. Which is difficult, and it does leave it in an interesting position. I mean, so basically they move Cyclops in. Cyclops is the new Magneto, basically, yeah. Which sucks. Although I do like Magneto, but
that makes sense.
Yeah,
we talked about it last time. It totally makes sense for him to go down that road.
Yeah. So I mean, so they did it well. I mean, it was a good issue. I mean, but it ended pretty much. I mean. I wouldn't say everything is exactly the same. Like there is going to be a lasting effect. We're going to get Uncanny Avengers out of it. We're the merging of the X-Men and the Avengers, and we're going to get more new mutants. So that'll be interesting to see. But it just sucks that I've got to wait years for somebody to redeem Cyclops, which is going to stink. But
well, you're going to get young Cyclops. You're going to get young unfettered Cyclops in the new.
Yeah, so I can
with
just
a horrible, horrible costume.
What do you mean?
Doesn't Cyclops have that awful costume?
Oh, I don't know. The young Cyclops, he's in the blue and the yellow, from what I can tell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That might be the current Cyclops. So.
Oh, okay.
Ron, where did Nova come from?
They still haven't explained it.
Okay.
No idea.
That was a great badass moment.
Yeah.
First, I went awesome. Wait a minute.
Yeah. No. They introduced Nova in the Infinite comic thing, but they didn't explain who he was. He just came from space going, Phoenix is coming, and then he was off the map, and then he just returned in this issue and knocked Cyclops down, and then you have Thor inviting him to join the Avengers. It's like, what?
Is it Richard Rider?
No, it's not Richard Rider, from what I can tell.
But he has
to
ask his mom?
Yeah. So we don't know who it is. The interesting thing was in Uncanny X-Men number 19, Kieran Gillen and Dale Eaglesham kind of tackled the downfall of Cyclops' Dark Phoenix from Cyclops' point of view. And I gotta say, it reads very much like the Dr. Manhattan scenes in Watchmen. You know, where it's like, because it has got Scott like kind of traveling through time, and it's like I there's one point where he says, he's with Professor Xavier when he's a kid, and the narration is a bald man in a wheelchair is telling me he can help. He means everything. I say hello to a redheaded girl, and it's like, uh-huh. I'm fighting a man with claws. It's just like, it just is very Watchmen, like you know that scene I'm talking about.
Yep.
Like,
yeah. Is it issue three, four, five?
Yeah.
Issue five.
Yeah, and also in the movie with the Philip Glass music, yeah. So, but again, and then here we have, and this is the continuity freak in me, but then the issue ends with Beast and Cyclops arguing, and this is before they're bringing Cyclops to whatever prison, and he's just in handcuffs, and he has like a ruby quartz visor in front of him, a totally different outfit than what he's wearing in AVX 12. So we're gonna see inconsistencies in how they handle.
Oh, that's all right. They don't even know how to draw Beast anymore. Beast looks completely different every time they draw him.
Yeah, I know. It does end, and basically it ends with Cyclops and finding out that they're new mutants and saying that, I did awful things. I'm not asking for forgiveness. I'm going to spend my life repaying for my crimes, but I do it all again because it means they're new mutants. And it ends with him making the X with his arms. And that was kind of inspiring in that regard. I don't know. But then finally, of all unlikely places, Avengers vs. X-Men versus number 6, the last issue, featured not only Kieran Gillen and Jim Chung doing a more detailed fight between Hope and Scarlet Witch from the scene that happened in AVX 12, and it just looked beautiful. It was just like some awesome Jim Chung, put him on something monthly. Put him on something ongoing because it just looks amazing. But then the backup was a bunch of 1 to 2 page humor fights. Where they had Bendis and Jim Mafu doing a page of Cyclops and Captain America verbally arguing. And then there was a one page of by the Immonens of all the science guys arguing with each other. And then there was one of Domino versus Red Hulk and Toad versus Jarvis and Spider-Woman versus all the X-Women. And it's Hawkeye just watching her fight other girls. It's like it was like one of those, kind of humory send-up ones. That was really kind of a lighthearted end to the whole event for me. It was a nice little bookend.
That's
so, nice. Yeah. So AVX is done. Uncanny Avengers comes out next week. Marvel Now starts, and so this is the movement into
it.
Can
I get a 1 to 5 rating on Avengers versus X-Men as a whole?
3.5.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
It had some real good entertaining parts, but it was about 3 issues too long.
Yeah, I give it 3.5. I say that there were the Jason Aaron and the Jonathan Hickman issue stood out as the best. For me, you know, there were some art issues throughout the whole thing. We talked about that felt as if they tried to do too much. I thought the Iron Fist Kunlun connection was just too much, you know. And also, I feel as if they didn't, you know, like I said, justify Cyclops early on enough to cause the manhunt that Captain America led. But beyond that, it was entertaining. It was good. And I'll find some way to forgive Jason Aaron for doing what he's doing to my favorite character.
It's justified. It's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in my heart, I'll find a way to forgive. Well, no. So now the challenge is on their end to tell good stories with this. Okay,
it's Cyclops that you can't forgive.
Yeah. Well,
it's true. Your heart's broken. You're acting like a jilted lover. You're blaming you're blaming the guy your girlfriend cheated on you with instead of the girlfriend.
Oh my God. This is getting to the heart of it right now.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Daredevil, End of Days, number one. I did not read this.
Well, this is. I'm just shocked. I'm holding it in my hand. This was the book that I. Come out.
How long ago was this written?
Yeah, so this is co-written by Bendis and David Mack, pencils by Klaus Janson, with finishes and painted art by Bill Sienkiewicz. This was the basically Daredevil the End story that Bendis and Mack talked about years ago. I don't know what the delays were, what the problems were, but this was actually quite good.
I'm really of two minds on it because I like Ben Urich a lot. And I was like, I feel like I haven't hung out with Ben Urich in a while. And I really liked, like, it felt like I was reading a really great comic that from the 80s that I had always meant to get to, that people have been saying, no, that comic's great. You know what I'm talking about? It just looked like an older comic, I guess, because of Janson and Sienkiewicz.
Yeah.
I know. So, like, it felt like sort of a classic comic book. So it was really great to look at. I guess it was good. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it a lot. How's that?
Well, I felt like it was firmly steeped in the Bendis run of Daredevil, which to me is still one of the greatest runs, and was
maybe that's it because that was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. So the art felt like a throwback to like classic 80s Daredevil.
Yes.
But then the story also felt like a throwback to 2000s Daredevil. So I like that mix. And like you said, like we haven't got to hang out with Ben Urich in this, you know, raincoat, dark, wet New York night, you know, kind of mode, standing in the rain, trying to write on his notebook, you know. So I enjoyed it. I mean, like, it's 8 issues. I don't know what to expect over 8 issues. Seems like
that's a long time.
You know, they set up a good story. I'm intrigued, and it's a different feel than what's going on in Daredevil now. And so I'm happy to read it. So
he's dead. That's the story, right?
Yeah.
He gets killed right at the beginning, sort of. Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know if you know about this, but sometimes in comics, on the last page, they'll show you something that goes against everything you thought you knew.
Oh, really? They do?
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Well, I love the Daredevil run that Bendis was on, but...
You'd like this.
Probably. I'm just going to wait for the trade, I think.
Yeah. Right. It's going to be a nice little trade volume that you can get.
That's probably not a bad bet. Given the track record we're looking at here.
We'll see if it finishes. That's all I'm saying. in the meantime, the Seagate GoFlex Satellite is the only wireless portable hard drive that streams content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices with a 500 gigabyte hard drive, Wi-Fi access, and a rechargeable battery. The Satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, pictures, and documents to be shared on your iPad or Android tablet via the free GoFlex Media app or web browser. And I can testify to this personally. I use a GoFlex Satellite to hold all of Ron's MorrisonCon media on it, which I'm now holding for ransom. I have video of all of the panels from MorrisonCon on a GoFlex Satellite hard drive. And Ron, the bidding starts now.
I need it, Connor. So
so you can, it was really quick and easy. It's a big hard drive. It's nice and portable. It's not too big. Put it right in your pocket. So go to Seagate.com/iFanboy for more, and you can find out about the wonderful Seagate GoFlex Satellite.
And you can also go to Seagate.com/iFanboy, get 10% off purchasing one for yourself. So definitely take follow up on that.
I'm going to go there, buy one, Ron, and then we're going to play some 3-card Monty game. Which satellite has the media on it?
It's the red.
Oh, is it the one I just dropped in the toilet?
Where's the lady?
So Smallville season 11, number 6. Ronnie's still behind on this.
I need to catch up.
Okay. So. Well, this is worth mentioning because it's still a Batman story.
The fact that I'm behind works because if you remember correctly, I used to fall behind on the TV show and then spend watching 4 hours in a row and catch up. So,
appropriate. Yeah. Couple of things. One, this was a particularly really funny issue, you know, with Otis and Lex, and there's a scene where they're looking at surveillance footage, and Lex tells Otis to enhance the video, and he's like, "You can't do that." Like all those TV shows that show people enhancing the video, that doesn't actually exist.
To say it, enhance.
But what's worth mentioning because one thing that Ron and I have complained about this series is the art, but in this issue, Jamal Igel does the art, and it's actually really quite good. So it really elevates the book.
He's like a fan.
Yes, exactly. Like, so
not only is he a good storyteller, but he's a fan of the property.
It works well in that the characters look enough like the actors, but they're not, you know, slavishly devoted like they've been before, to where the art suffers. So it actually works really well. Good. Uncanny X-Force 32, for some reason I thought was the final issue. So I was reading it in my head, and I was like, this isn't wrapping up. And then it didn't.
Because he's increasingly panicked.
It kind of was, because I love this series so much, and this is the final story arc for Remender, and I was about 3/4 of the way through, and I was like, this isn't ending.
No, I think I there's no number on it, but I think I'm pretty sure New X-Force doesn't kick in until December, so yeah, so we still got a handful of issues to go, so especially if it's bi-monthly shipping.
Well, there could be 12 more issues between now and December.
Yeah, just how glorious is this, if this is the swan song with him and Noto just killing it. Like, this is like the magic is back. Like, reading this issue, I was just like, I was cheering. I was shocked by betrayals. I was laughing. It was just, and I got to give Remender credit for utilizing one of my all time favorite movie references ever.
Oh, I say we let him go. that is one of my favorite scenes of all time. I think this is the best sequential work I've ever seen from Noto. We love Noto's pinups. He used to be a mainstay on Josh's weekly SketchUp feature.
Then he started getting work. I'm not saying there's a coincidence there.
But he did do pages, and I used to think they were kind of stiff, but this is the best sequential work I've seen from him by far.
The first time I saw him, he was doing, I want to say, Robin covers, maybe Robin interiors even. And they were great. Like, I was like, that's great back then.
He does a great static image.
Yeah.
But it's storytelling. He can have. He's still. I think he's still getting there. But this is really good looking. So he's getting there quick. It was the Horizon. What was that book called?
Infinite Horizon.
I think that was the last interior I saw about him, which was like 7 years ago. But
he did a Jonah Hex.
Oh, that's right. He did a couple of Jonah Hex issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, anyway, and of course, he did the Creator on Heroes thing recently.
Josh, if you ever get around to finishing this series and trade, you'll enjoy this.
I'm totally going to. Yeah.
This arc is. This is really keeping you on the edge of the seat. There are twists and turns. It's like, and this is great because you get a bunch of different little interludes. You get, you know, a point of view of Dokken. You get a point of view of Deadpool. You get some Wolverine, some great Age of Apocalypse, Nightcrawler, and Mystique stuff. And it feels like old X-Men modernized in the best possible way.
Yeah.
I think I'm through the third book, so whatever the I think it was the Dark Angel saga, maybe.
Yes, that would be the most relevant one. That's pretty much the one that's most relevant to this series. Yeah, I think.
That was the best one, I thought. Not art wise, but story wise, I thought it was the best one.
Yeah.
Action Comics number 13 made me cry.
I knew it would. I knew it.
Yeah. It was, and it was the first. The first half of it was Travel Foreman on art.
I
don't know if he was the best match for it. I knew you were going to say that you liked it a lot.
He's weird, and the weird style works for the Kryptonian stuff.
I got a little lost. It was my problem with it. Like it's the Phantom Zone, so it's sort of weird. And did they change the way the Phantom Zone works a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's what I was applying my old rules to it, and it didn't work out in my head. Instead of going in fresh, I think I'd sort it out by the end.
That, you know, the way that Morrison writes Superman is that he's a little weird and little alien. So I think that in that sense, a little weird little alien art style really works and makes him feel that way to me. Anyway, that's why I liked it.
Yeah. This whole issue, I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, but the second thing, as soon as they showed Clark sort of at the gravestone with the dog right next to him, I was like, oh my god, that's so sad.
Well, the backup was A Boy and His Dog, which was by Charlie Fish and Brad Walker, and this was the story of Crypto the Ghost Dog and Clark, and I knew this would get you, so that's why I made you read it.
It totally did, too, like right away, and I was like, oh, come on. They barely even wrote anything. So I think you got to give Charlie Fish credit, but Brad Walker, who you may remember from Guardians of the Galaxy, and now he's doing Hypernaturals with Abnett and Lanning over at Boom, but he did a great job with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. those are the books. There weren't very many, so that we wouldn't talk about, but those are the books that came out this week. You can talk about the books, what you thought of the books, go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books. You've got to make the pull list to rate your books. Somebody wrote in asking how to do that. You actually have to make the pull list in order to write reviews. And make your pick of the week. And now let's run down, Josh, run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience.
We'll do number 5, Avengers vs. X-Men, number 12, with 7.2%, which is, by the way, probably better than most of the last issues of these events have done.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. A lot of times by the end of it, they're like, oh, okay, that's enough. Number 4, Sweet Tooth, number 38, 7.2%, running down the clock. Legends of the Dark Knight, number 1, comes in at the third position with 8%. Uncanny X-Force, number 32, with 11.1%. And then the first most popular community choice for pick of the week is Daredevil End of Days number 1 with 20.1%. These might these could change.
You know, what's interesting is that 20 for the number 1 book, 20 is really super low. I mean, and it was going down as I was putting the script together. It was so it might be even dip below 20, but you had single digit percentages going through the top 10.
When you're number 5 has 7%, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. It was like the next one was like 6.8. Like it was close to the top 10 and then dropped off a bit. But it was very very unusual week in terms of percentages.
Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead with this. Lawless wrote about Green Lantern number 13, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage on that was 0.2%. And he said, while this is by no means amazing, I'm for the first time in a long while enjoying a John's Green Lantern book. Baz is a very different Green Lantern than any of the previous ones, and I'm starting to get very invested in his story. Though the circumstances were a little convenient on how he got into the trouble he's in now, a Green Lantern of Arabic descent having to deal with a post-9/11 world is intriguing. The character is fresh and new, and exploring what he and his family have to go through from their perspective has me captivated. Doug Monkey's art is solid, and Jeff Johns' writing is starting to feel like old Jeff Johns from the book's heyday.
And we should probably mention that this was a user review written by a member of the iFanboy community.
I got right into it.
Yeah, you skip over the every episode is a new person's podcast. yeah, I'm torn on the new Green Lantern. I don't know. I'm curious to see where it goes. This picked right up from the Zero issue. Again, Zero issue.
You've been reading it all the way through?
Yeah. No, I'm reading all the way through. That Zero issue just could have been the previous issue. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it could have just been issue.
Well, it was. It came out before.
Well, then no harm, no foul.
Like, it could have been issue 13. This could have been issue 14. But I thought it was interesting to see when he got the – am I the only one reading it? Or
Yeah, I did really like the Zero issue, so I thought about picking this up. But then I saw the double-page spread with all the Green Lantern books and characters, and I thought, oh, I don't want all those.
Well, what happened was – it's mainly just on him, and they show him getting the ring, and the ring is trying to give him the orientation speech. But you see Hal and Sinestro kind of intercept it and telling him like, "Don't go to Oa, don't trust anyone." Like, you know? And so like that was kind of, you know, like it's a good positioning in that you've got this new Green Lantern who's got no real connection to the Guardians, and he's in the middle of this whole big problem, and he just doesn't know what to do really.
Well, that was always fun. I mean, you know, as much as I like Hal, it's always fun to meet a new Green Lantern like John Stewart or Guy Gardner, and there's just been no other new Green Lanterns who, you know, have to figure it all out the first time, and that's kind of the fun part of always the beginning of the hero's journey. So I might go back, although next week there's about 15 billion books coming out, so I don't know if I will, but
and then just give it, you know,
I thought about it,
sample perhaps.
Maybe I'll go onto the DC Comics app and check it out there.
Maybe.
Well, I'm going to read this next one because it's more Ron. You already talked about Uncanny X-Men 19, but this one is a bit of a rant about it. I thought it was worth hearing, maybe getting your thoughts on it. E. Junkerman reviewed Uncanny X-Men 19, gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5, and 0.1% made it the pick of the weekend. E. Junkerman said, I decided to sample this because AVX was out this week, and this is supposed to be AVX 12 through Cyclops' point of view. I should have just read the fourth chapter of Watchmen because this issue seemed to be a pale homage with Cyclops' Dr. Manhattan. Poor Kieran Gillen. With these tie-ins, he's really scraping the bottom of the barrel with fresh ideas that aren't already in the main event. Dale Eaglesham actually penciled this issue, not the solicited Acuna, and his art is meh. Nothing spectacular, nothing god-awful, just uninspired pictures telling a story. My favorite part of the issue was Eaglesham taking advantage of Marvel editors not caring anymore about how Beast is drawn from panel to panel. Beast's appearance changes from Morrison's New X-Men to Perez's Avengers. Thanks for the attention to detail, Marvel. Now get off the event tie-in train and give us some quality stories.
Well, I can't argue that. he definitely leaned more towards the classic Beast look and less than the Quietly look.
It's happening a lot.
happening a ton.
I think at this point they know about it.
Yeah.
And they're just engendering it.
Yeah.
I want somebody to draw him just as the human.
With the feet?
Yeah, just see if anybody notices.
But
who's that guy? That's Beast, but you can't tell.
He's got glasses. He's more shoes.
He's got pedal pushers on.
So those are the books that were reviewed by the iFanboy community. Go to iFanboy.com/comics where you can do your pull list and you can rate and review and write reviews and all that some fun stuff and get on the show.
So guys, you do anything next week?
I'm going to sleep.
Yeah, I'm just going to put my feet up, watch some movies.
Here's the thing about that. New York Comic Con is actually next week, starting October 11th to the 14th at the Javits Center in New York City.
Fuck.
It's a sponsor, Connor.
It's not about the con. It's about having to go to out of my apartment and get on a plane.
That's true. That is
once I get there,
this.
It'll be fine. It's the
comic guests include Brian K. Vaughan, Rick Remender, Jeff Johns, Ivan Reese, Jonathan Hickman, Mark Waid, Kieran Gillen, Mike Mignola, Scott Snyder, and many, many more. Entertainment guests include Bill Paxton,
nice,
Adam West, Christopher Lloyd, David Wayne, Rob Corddry, Paul Scheer, Sean Astin, and more. Sean Astin will help you carry your stuff.
Did I tell you last time that I don't want to meet Adam West ever?
No, neither do I.
I could see that. I
feel
like
I just
sense.
Want him to exist as Adam West in my head and never as a real thing.
I feel like he smells like he has a half-eaten apple in his pocket that's been there for about a half a week.
Or lozenges.
Something like that.
We should tell the people that the exciting thing about it is that this is the Revenge of the Nerds panel.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask. That was what I was going to ask you about.
Robert Carradine and Curtis Armstrong. Booger and who was the main
Lewis.
There? Lewis.
Or no, Gilbert. No, Gilbert. No, Lewis. Lewis is right.
One of the
Gilbert was Mark Green.
Anthony Edwards' appearance there.
If he did, we'd have to go, right?
I kind of want to go anyway. Booger's going to be there. And then we can ask Booger about his great line in not that movie, but the other one.
Better Off Dead?
Yeah, when he's...
What?
Do you know the street value of this mountain?
Go that way fast. If something
gets in your way,
turn.
Okay, we got off. It's Curtis Armstrong, man. Ben Folds 5 is playing a concert. This doesn't even sound like a comic show anymore, but... They've got a lot of different stuff going on, but great comic guests also. Ben Folds 5 is playing a kickoff concert on Thursday, October 11th, free to all VIP and four-day ticket holders. You can get tickets and four-day passes for $85, three-day passes
actually,
for $65.
I think they're mostly sold out at this point. I think there's only a couple of day passes left.
Until October 8th. So that is that's Monday or Sunday. If you listen to this early, you might be able to still get these pricing. So buy now. Single-day tickets are also available if you want to go a la carte. You can go to NewYorkComicCon.com, no spaces or dashes in Comic-Con, to buy tickets and get full details on the show. We will be there. And details from our party are on iFanboy.com, stuck up at the top of that. And I'm at that Revenge of the Nerds thing.
Well, we can talk about the party right now. Actually, to go back to the tickets, all the single day passes except for Friday are sold out, I believe, as well as all the 4 day passes, stuff like that. So if you didn't order before October 8th, you're kind of SOL. Hopefully you did already. But in terms of our party, it is Friday night at Idle Hands, which is a bar in the Lower East Side.
Alphabet City. You can say it.
Alphabet City, yeah. It's much, much nicer now than it was in the 80s. And it was where we had the party last year. Should be a great time. We're going to kick things off at 9 o'clock. I'm going to DJ for a little bit. And then our special guests, Jerome Pena and Rick Remender, are going to be there. And they're going to be DJing as well. And last year, it went until I left at 3.
Yeah, that's about when I left.
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
And some other people were like, we're going to go out again. You're going to come with us? And I was like, no, I am not going to do that.
I heard at one point the guy at the bar was like, listen, you guys just have to go. It was like 5 a.m. And like, so, you know, I know that this year there's a little more activity in terms of parties going around at the con this year. But it seems as if, you know, come by anytime after 9 o'clock. It's totally free. Anybody can get in. And
drink proceeds go to a good cause.
We're teamed up with Church for a Cure, and so all proceeds from the drinks go to help the fight against cancer. So you can't really argue that. So, yeah, we hope to see you all there. And I can already tell you now that there are – if you like comic pros, you'll want to be at this party because there's already a whole bunch have said that they're coming. So you get to meet some of your favorite comic pros if you go. Maybe if you're nice.
And Adam West and Booger.
Buy them drinks.
And Mark Green.
And Mark, seriously, if Mark Green is there and we don't go
– And Jimmy Hoffa.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that scene in ER when Gilbert was on?
Don't. If we go down this road, we're never coming back.
I was just watching. I remember watching it with Lindsay, and I was like, "Do you know what's happening right there?" And she was like, "No."
Stop. We're never who coming played, back. Who, we're never coming
who
back.
Who played Gilbert's dad in Revenge of the Nerds?
That'll do, Pig.
Yeah. Cromwell.
Oh yeah, Cromwell. Yeah. Oh, good call.
All right,
we've got Bush.
Emails.
I got him.
That's a good thing I wasn't drinking. Isaac N. from New York, who is Isaac
N. The fuck is a frush?
1983. Writes and says,
whoa, that was when you could still do racist stereotypes in movies.
I just read your article on Mark Miller's new position on Fox, as Fox's creative consultant for its movie properties, Marvel movie properties. I think this one has a chance of really improving the quality of Fox's comic book movie output and offering a real challenge to Marvel Studios. However, something Miller said really stood out to me. Quote, I spent 10 years working at Marvel, and I'm really happy with the work I did on the comic side of things, end quote. The reason this stands out is prose authors don't generally refer to their work as the book side of things, and I don't think creators of television shows that are adapted into films refer to their work as being on the television side of things. It really seems like Mark Miller views comic books as part of a larger multimedia production pipeline and not necessarily as a medium unto themselves. Is that where we are with mainstream comic books as mainstream superhero books more or less glorified R&D?
This question has come up a lot. Not specifically. I don't know if he meant anything specific by that. But it's clear that Miller is media savvy in terms of looking at a sort of all-world approach.
Much
with
to his financial credit.
And that's really the thing, is that if you want to make comics, you're only going to make so much money.
Yeah, I don't say that's a bad thing. He's done quite well for himself by being very smart about seeing the media world as a whole.
And the other side of that being that, I feel like he's still, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of his work, but I feel like the dude's got love for comic books still, because the fact is he doesn't have to do them anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if he never did another comic book again, he could get, you know, gigs producing and writing and pitching and having a development deal, because he's already got a proven track record. And once you have that in Hollywood, you're set.
Yep.
You know, until your next project. But either way, I mean, he could walk away from comics no problem. I think we've seen other guys who've done that. But he keeps coming back, and I have to only assume that it's not because of, you know, the huge financial reward, but he must, I'm sure he does fine, but he's got something for the medium, clearly.
It was funny that when that announcement about him with Fox, I was talking to some people at the con about it this past weekend. I wasn't surprised at all, given his relationship with Matthew Vaughn and him being entrenched there after doing First Class and all that stuff. It made sense. I mean, and basically it's really no different than what Bendis and Quesada are doing on the quote unquote creative committee with Marvel Studios.
Or Loeb with the TV,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, but the thing is, I don't know if it seems that Mark Miller views comics as part of a larger multimedia, you know, pipeline, as is everyone does.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like you, I mean, we tend to frown upon when we get a book, we're like, oh, this is just a pitch and blah, blah, blah. We dismiss it. But every now and then there are books that come out that get, I mean, Walking Dead, you know, the Chew is in development. You know, like there are other books that are in, you know, that are in play, whether it's movies or film. And that's another way for a lot of the creators to add to their income and to add to their, you know, like, it's not just the monthly page rate. It's actually, okay, you get an option, then something becomes of it. And then you can actually, you know, like, they can be, it become a bigger, you know, kind of IP property. And that's the name of the game. That's what everyone's doing. So
Hollywood is funding your curator owned comic, you know, sort of mainstream creator owned comics. It's not sales.
I mean,
for the most part.
The short answer to your question is yes. Are mainstream superhero books now more or less glorified R&D? Not just mainstream superhero books. Are comic books glorified R&D? Yeah, but in the same way that novels are, in the same way that, you know, video games are. I mean, how many?
Everything is just fodder for Hollywood.
The Resident Evil movie? Probably not, but a lot of people did. That's, you know, that's a video game. Yeah. You know, a ton books get turned into TV shows and movies all the time.
Harry Potter.
Exactly. So,
and you know, as long as the property originally stands on its own, I mean, you know, it's up to you as a consumer to make the judge, like, hey, is this something I want to read or not? And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Like, is it a good comic book? You know, is that enough? If that's all you want to read, is that fine? You know, which is everything that's ever been made into a movie. You know, it doesn't mean that the Road to Perdition comic book was shitty or was bad because they made it into a movie later.
It was a better movie than it was a comic book. Let's skip to the third email because it's somewhat related to this subject.
Emails from Peoria. It says, it drives me crazy that they advertise comic book movies on the cover of the comics, obscuring the artwork, when we all know damn well that the people actually buying the book are 90% guaranteed ticket buyers without this nonsense banner. What makes me even crazier is that they do not advertise the actual comics as viciously before the movie. Avengers is the third highest grossing movie of all time, and they can't have an AVX commercial before it starts. No Night of the Owls ad before Dark Knight Rises. They care so much about the readers knowing about the movie and so little about the moviegoers knowing about the comics, even during major publishing events. Comics could use those ads and numbers so much. I just don't get it. Not sure what my question is here. Just annoyed. Wondered if you had anything to say about the subject. Maybe calm me down.
Good read.
Nice.
Thank you.
That was Jake.
Really nice read. I think you really got that.
It's similar in that the money flows one way, right? I mean,
they don't care.
Yeah, they make Warner Brothers will make way more money off Dark Knight Rises than they'll ever make off the Batman comics. So they are more inclined to get people to go to the movie than to buy the books. That's what I think.
Yeah,
I think that from the studio perspective, the sales of the comic book just don't matter to them.
There's also a hierarchy in Hollywood where movies are on top of everything.
Right.
Yes.
So everything goes to support the films because
you know it's probably more likely to sell that comic book with the movie banner on top of it. Maybe they're not advertising to you, the comic book reader. Maybe they're advertising to the movie watcher.
That could be.
Which is sort of a reverse marketing on that. This is one of those things that people complain about all the time about how they've got all this stuff with the movies.
Well, it's appropriate for this week because you have the Arrow banner on top of all the DC books.
Right. Now, but the thing is, we're in year 12 of this movie revolution, this comic book superhero adaptation movie thing. Listen, I feel like I've seen lots of attempts to sell comic books. I've gotten a lot of DVDs that had comic books in them. I've gotten a lot of DVDs that have documentaries about the comic books in them.
There was
a really
lame screen of the Green Lantern comics. Was it after the Green Lantern movie?
It was after the credits.
Yeah.
Which
that's really – No, that's super late, especially that movie.
No, but even if it had been a good movie, who's sticking around? No one. It came out. You couldn't even read it was so up there so quickly. You couldn't even read it.
Yeah, but I've been in theaters where they gave away comics. I've been in theaters where the local comic shops, you know, where they are trying to and it doesn't move the needle. It just doesn't at this point. And I think that they've given up that argument. You know, like okay, you know, we'll take whatever ancillary sales we can get for comics after one of these movies, but overall. It doesn't make much of a difference on monthly sales. It just doesn't. It's not going to. Right. People want to go see a movie. They don't want to go read comics. Yeah. So they shore up their base for the comics. That's what they do.
You might add 100 or 1,000 or even 10,000 total new comic readers, but not enough to actually do anything.
Right. I know. Like it works a little differently. They sold a metric ass load of Watchmen trades from the Watchmen
and
movie.
For some reason, Walking Dead bucks all comic conventional wisdom from every angle.
Every possible way.
I think a lot of it has to do with it's not superheroes.
Yeah, I do too.
And that it's, you know, they're doing a good job with all the, they have all those trades out, and people feel better about not buying a brightly colored, four-color superhero comic than a zombie one for some reason. I think that's probably the case.
It's still got a higher hip quotient than Avengers stuff does.
All right, let's get the email in before we go.
Jesse B. says, I've heard other people ask for relationship advice on the show before, and I've been needing a lot of that over the past few weeks, so I thought I'd ask your opinions on an issue I've been having. Recently, my girlfriend of 3 years left me. It's been really hard on a lot of levels, but one thing that's really stung is that we don't read comics together anymore, which we used to do ever since I got her into them when we first started dating. Now I've been thinking about going all digital in order for her to read all the comics we used to read together, even though digital is not my preferred way of reading my books. I admit I might just be inclined to do this in order to hang out with her again, but I love this girl more than anything in the world, and I want to continue to share this wonderful world of comics with her. She even told me when we last talked over the phone that she might want to do this. So what do you guys think? Is going digital for this girl worth it? Would any of you do the same? I'd love to hear your opinions or advice.
I'm confused by this.
I am too. I don't understand why he needs to go digital to read comics with her unless...
Recently, my girlfriend of 3 years left me. So she's left you.
Okay, here's what I think.
Hang on.
Okay.
She's left you. And what you're saying now is you're sad that you don't read comics together anymore because she left you. And you're thinking of going digital in order to do that, in order to read comics with her again?
I think he's buying the comics digitally and then he would therefore give her the login so they could both read them and she doesn't have to buy them.
And this is some thinly veiled attempt to still hang some connection with the hopes that you can recover. You can, you know.
Stop it now. You broke up with her.
No,
you're
broke
done.
Up with him.
Yeah, she left.
That's what I mean. You're broken up. You can't. You can't. Yep. Listen. You can't hang on hoping to get back together.
We've all done it. We've all done it. Guess what's happened? It's never turned out well.
It's just stringing you along.
It's gonna hurt worse.
And it's gonna make it take you longer to get over it.
Yep.
And we're not being flippant about it at all. This is actually
You need to walk away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
fully.
Don't get me wrong. It sucks, and like we've all been there. We all know. And you're gonna do everything you can to try to hang out or whatever. But I don't know the reasons why she left you, but she left you. And you, I mean, the hanging on thing, like you gotta cut ties and you gotta move on. I mean, this is tough love, and I know it's hard. Trust me, I know it's hard. But doing this is not gonna help anything. It's not gonna, whatever the issues that she had with that over that made her leave you aren't gonna be fixed by the fact that you're buying her comics that she can read digitally.
And honestly, the only possible way, usually, and obviously everyone's different, there's always a different reason for everything, for her to want to come back is if you walk away.
Yep. Yeah.
If you hang around, you know, doing the stuff you always did with her, and she's got no reason to get back together. But if you disappear and she finally realizes, hey, all the stuff I liked is gone.
Yep.
You know, then she might come
back. So get your stuff back is what we're saying.
But clawing for dear life to the relationship is never ends up well.
It doesn't. And you're better than that. Come on, you're better than that. You know that. So, you know.
We're good at this. Why don't we ditch comics?
Any relationship questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We're going to skip the voicemails because we did a bunch of emails, but you can call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We have another podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss. Comes out usually every Monday, where we talk to a creator about a book that you absolutely can't miss when you go to the comic book store. This past week.
Was it Hardman?
It was Gabe Hardman.
Yeah,
that was good.
Listen, pal.
Listen, pal. I liked when you admitted to not watching all the Planet of the Apes movies, and he goes, "Well, are you writing a Planet of the Apes comic book?"
It was the moment I was waiting for.
It was great. This year, Paul talked to Scott Snyder about Batman number 13 as the whole Joker madness kicks off in DC. So that should be a good one. So go to iTunes, subscribe to it, or go to ifanboy.com on Monday, and you can hear it.
There is the Make Comics podcast as well that I do with Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, former Marvel and IDW editor, where we talk about a subject that has to do with breaking into comics from any of the different angles that you can do that, or just making comics professionally or for fun. That comes out every Wednesday. It's a short little podcast, usually. And there will be one more before New York Comic Con, and the week after that, maybe, maybe not. But Andy and I will actually both be at New York Comic Con, so if you track him down, he's a tall dude. And he can answer your questions.
You just threw him under the bus.
Now, they're going to ask me.
He's going to be asked. Listen,
he runs a school about making comics.
Andy will help you make your comic.
Andy will publish your comic.
Right, exactly. If you go up to him, he will publish your comic. Just tell him Josh sent you. Said Josh said you'd do it.
There you go.
And as Ron said earlier, we were going to be at New York Comic Con the entire time. You can find us at table 3263, which is in some part of the floor. I don't even know where. I haven't looked at the map yet. And as Ron said, the party's Friday night. You can find all that information at fanboy.com. There's a post at the very top in the Buzzable bar that has all the information about where we'll be and where you can find us and where the party is and all that stuff at ifanboy.com.
Sweet. And go to ifanboy.com where you can read Connor's Pick of the Week review on the Batman book. And
not Josh's Book of the Month review, for certain.
We're anxiously awaiting that, as well as all the other great... See every week there from the iFanboy staff. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/iFanboy, and on Facebook.com/iFanboy. Don't miss anything. And we will be at New York Comic Con, and we're going to be shooting video. We're going to be doing interviews, so you can see the return of iFanboy video coming to a screen near you.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you're going to leave a voicemail, you know, if you want us to play it, make sure it's not too long and tell us who you are and make it good. So call up and give it a shot, although probably not this week because we'll be doing the show from New York, but call anyway because we could use them later.
And
I thought all that out loud. I'm sorry.
If you like this show, if you like the Make Comics show or the Don't Miss show, it's on a separate feed or same feed. I don't remember anymore.
Separate feed.
Go to iTunes.com. iTunes.com. What happened?
I bet if you went to iTunes.com, it would work.
I'm still feeling the lingering effects of Las Vegas. Go to iTunes. You can write a review for our show, for any of the shows you listen to, any podcast you listen to, anywhere in the world. Do them the favor of writing a review on iTunes. It helps people find the show. And you know, it's not a hard thing to do. It's not like, you know, you've got to help them move. We're not asking you to come help me move.
It's not even an airport drive.
It's not, yeah, I'm not asking you to be picked up at the airport. I'm not asking to help move. I'm not asking
Listen, I'm sorry. The luggage isn't out yet. You need to keep circling.
Oh, fuck. Or you can tell your mom about it. Your mom might help us move because she's nice.
We're sitting right on the we're taxiing, but we've been here for an hour. I don't know what the deal
they
is.
They won't let me stop. The guy keeps can you pull me in? Keep circling.
Can you pull into the cell phone lot?
There is no
and
cell
just
phone
wait
lot.
There. Are you sure there's not a because I remember no, that's a different airport.
This is under construction. The cell phone lot's closed. I just keep circling, and the guy won't let me stop for more than 2 nanoseconds.
Which gate? Which I'm in the inner circle.
I'm at Terminal B. Are you not at Terminal B?
The outer one. Wait, is that international?
Oh fuck! You said supposed to- oh. Just get a cab.
Okay. That's a preview of what's to come next week in New York. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Is there a different route you can take? I mean, do we have to take the Van Wyck? Come on.
Did you fly into JFK LaGuardia?
LaGuardia.
Oh fuck! I'm in JFK.
I've been giving my advice to others. I try to tell them how to live. A little lie and a bit of truth. What I'd like for you to do, how to get. And I really didn't need to suffer. Still did it anyway. What a great big world. I better find some way.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.